supported the Palestinian resistance from day one. On the streets of Tehran, people are calling this an unbearable human tragedy unfolding before their very eyes.
We have them in any way, shape, or form that we can. The entire world is watching silently, and even Western countries, and the U.S. in particular, are blatantly supporting the Zionists as they commit these atrocities. The Palestinians are our Muslim brothers and sisters, and we have to do everything we can do to help them.
The most barbaric scenes that one could imagine are coming out of Gaza. I couldn't sleep the night as I saw images of a hospital in Gaza where a young child pulled from under the rubble was all alone crying. He was probably the only one left from his family, just like many other kids there. How can the world do nothing? All countries should call for an immediate ceasefire.
I can't believe that in year 2023 we are witnessing such atrocities. It is completely unbelievable. No one is trying to stop the Zionists. Why? Just because Palestinians don't have blonde hair and blue eyes? Just because they are Muslims? They deserve to be treated this way. We saw how all these countries who are now supporting Israel were vocal when it was all about Ukraine.
Currently, over 9 million Iranians have signed up to go to Gaza to help Palestinians in their fight for freedom.
Does international law mean anything at all, or it is just for some countries to benefit from? History will judge them. Such atrocities are completely unprecedented. I never thought that I would be seeing such images. How can they call themselves humans? How can the rest of the world just sit and watch and do nothing? Everyone should demand an immediate ceasefire and humanitarian help for Palestinians. I would go to help them if I could.
When I see these images, I feel nauseous. All these young, innocent children. Why do they have to suffer? They haven't done anything wrong. They need humanitarian help immediately.
Children, hospitals, schools, according to international law, they should not be attacked. But we see now how they are bombarded every day. There should be an immediate ceasefire. Israelis have absolutely no shame. They call themselves human. Them and all those who support these atrocities. The U.S. The international community now knows the truth about them. Them and their so-called human rights.
Israel waged a war on Gaza on October 7th. At least 11,000 Palestinians have been killed in the strikes, most of them women and children, while 27,000 others have been injured. Tel Aviv has also imposed a complete siege on Gaza, cutting off fuel, electricity, food and water to more than 2 million Palestinians living there.
Iranians are appalled by the images coming out of the Gaza Strip showing the atrocities of the Zionist regime. They are also shocked that Western countries led by the United States are supporting the Israeli regime. Iranians are calling for an immediate ceasefire and immediate humanitarian help for the people in Gaza. Yusumi Shahmadi, Press TV, Tehran.
The first international congress in tribute to the father of Iran's missile program, Hassan Tehrani Muqaddam, was held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. The event also marked his 12th martyrdom anniversary. Senior military and state officials attended the ceremony to honor his lofty status and unique role in the missile program of the country.
Martyr Tehrani Muqaddam opened the chapter of self-reliance in the defense industry and put an end to the thoughts of unwilling people who said we don't have the strength to compete in any industry. He believed that we can and thus became the father of Iran's missile program.
Tehrani Muqaddam, a commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, was a key figure in Iran's ballistic missile program. An engineer by profession, he designed the Shahab, Qadr, and Sajil missiles with a range of over 1,000 kilometers. Tehrani Muqaddam began establishing Iran's missile program when the country was under attack during the eight-year Iraqi imposed war on Iran. He continued his efforts to boost the program in subsequent years amid difficulties and shortages.
Today, we're at the peak of military power, and we have prepared ourselves for all situations. Today, we're not only at the world level in the field of missiles, but also in drones, space, defense, radar, and other sectors. For such achievements, we have used the model of Shahid Tehrani Muqaddam.
Tehrani Muqaddam was martyred in an explosion in November 2011. The blast came during a missile test at a base in Bidgan, west of Tehran. At least 16 others were also killed in the blast.
Observers say the West's efforts to stop Iran's missile program over the past couple of years reveals the significance of Tehrani Muqaddam's legacy, which serves as Iran's main power of deterrence. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
After 5 weeks of shocking war crimes, official Western pressure is finally mounting on Tel Aviv. French President Emmanuel Macron admitted in an interview that Israel's actions have, quote, no legitimacy. He added, quote, these babies, these ladies, these old people are bombed and killed, so there is no reason for that. So we do urge Israel to stop. Citizen pressure on Tel Aviv continues with marches worldwide, with over 10,000 marching across Paris.
Macron has to finally extend actual support to the Palestinians and force Israel to accept a ceasefire. This is an attempt at genocide, and there are children dying every day.
The deliberate targeting of civilians has left over 11,000 Palestinians murdered, which is more dead civilians in 1 month than in over 1.5 years of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. Many say that Israel's 75-year-long brutality, repression, and human rights violations are out in the open like never before, and that things will never be the same.
Global opinion has changed because all these videos on Twitter and Instagram make it crystal clear who the aggressor is. And the double standard with Ukraine is also obvious. The French government constantly cried that this was a scandal, but then they remained silent as Gazans die day and night.
Israel has increased their bombing and murder in Lebanon, further sparking the possibility of a major multinational war.
As Lebanese, firstly, we're concerned by the crisis that's happening in Gaza, because Lebanon was previously occupied by Israel in 1982. Beirut was the second Arab capital occupied by Israel. And so we've had the bitter taste of occupation before by the Israelis. Currently, south of Lebanon is under attack by Israel. This conflict can turn into a regional conflict with Hezbollah getting involved, Israel instigating Lebanese parties, the Syrians, the Iranians, the Yemenis into this conflict.
This week, at the first Western-hosted summit on Palestine, Macron said the clear conclusion was that, quote, there is no other solution than a humanitarian pause and then going on to a ceasefire, end quote. Marchers here hope that Washington and Tel Aviv listen to the sound of the global chorus. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Tens of thousands of people have marched through the streets of Cape Town to the office of the provincial administration. They have called on the South African government to support the oppressed Palestinians. The government has downgraded ties with Israel, but protesters want a complete severing of relations.
The West continuously put the narrative through Hamas terrorist group. Hamas is a resistance group for the liberation. In South Africa, when we fought against the apartheid regime, we were called liberators. We were supported when we fought against the apartheid regime. When they do it, when Hamas do it, they call them terrorists.
The march was organized by a broad coalition of organizations, including religious bodies, Jewish groups, political parties, including the ruling ANC, and trade unions. South Africa's government has withdrawn its diplomatic staff from Tel Aviv, but it still plays host to the Israeli ambassador, something people here are not happy with.
This has been described as the mother of all marches. It is probably the biggest demonstration that South Africa has hosted since the outbreak of the latest violence in occupied Palestine. Protesters say they will continue to come out onto the streets until the South African government takes decisive steps to expel the Israeli ambassador.
People must pressure government into action at times. This is but one of those pressures. Capetonians have shown that they are with the people of Palestine. Their government must take another step further. The government of the ANC must do that.
But even with the inaction of politicians, and while South Africa's Christian party, the ACDP, standing fully behind Israel, increasingly those who follow the faith are seeing for themselves how the Bible is being abused.
The God that I pray to would never condone what is going on in Palestine, and that's why we're here today to show our support. How do you feel as a Christian?
This was the reaction of these women when I asked about the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's use of biblical scripture to justify the massacres.
I think when it comes to the Bible, I mean, we live by our teachings, but it can be, anyone can take the Bible and twist what God's word says into what they want it to mean. And I think that's exactly what's happening with Netanyahu. I mean, he's basically doing what he wants and trying to justify it by twisting what the scriptures say.
The protests are growing bigger and more diverse. For every Palestinian the American-backed Israeli war machine kills, another voice rises against it. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
In a passionate display of unity, people from diverse backgrounds gathered at the rally in a powerful show of solidarity with Palestine. The crowd, carrying Palestinian flags and banners, voiced their condemnation of the actions taken by Israel and the United States, demanding justice and equality for the people of Palestine.
The percentage of children who have died in this conflict is more than that who have died in 2 years of Ukraine conflict. It itself shows that actually it's not a war, it's a genocide going on. They are intentionally killing civilians, they are intentionally killing children. 30% or more are actually women.
Speakers at the rally passionately articulated the need for a peaceful resolution to the long-standing conflict and called for an end to the oppression faced by the Palestinian people.
1400 years ago, what happened in Karbala, you are repeating that. My message to Israel is, stop being a genocide, be a human, face the reality. My question is to the United Nations. If it happens somewhere in Europe, how would they react?
Participants expressed their commitment to raising awareness about the plight of Palestinians, highlighting the urgency of finding a just and lasting solution to the conflict.
We cannot turn a blind eye to the relentless oppression unfolding in Palestine. We must bear witness to the suffering of the Palestinian people who face not just physical, but emotional and psychological scars.
Similar rallies were held in various cities of the country with a sense of determination and hope as participants pledged to continue their advocacy for the rights of the Palestinian people.
Expressions of solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians during these rallies not only signify a rejection of Israel's atrocities, but also serve as a platform for Pakistanis to voice their discontent with the international community's response to the crisis in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Press TV, Islamabad.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Over the past 75 years of the occupation of the Palestinian territories, the Israeli regime, thanks to the biased coverage of the Western mainstream media, has been using propaganda and disinformation to justify its atrocities against the people of Palestine. In the ongoing war on Gaza, Israel has once again used similar methods, which are seen as the Israelis trying to play the victim card and legitimize the genocide in Gaza. It seems that the Israeli regime is losing the narrative on Gaza, given the mounting global support for the Palestinians and anti-Israel campaigns, both on the streets and in social media as well. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Yves Engler, author and political activist, joining us from Montreal. And also spokesperson of the Masar Baril movement, Mr. Khalid Barakat, joining us from Vancouver. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Engler in Montreal. Given the increased level of support that we're seeing out on the streets for the Palestinian cause and the opposition to the Israeli war, Mr. Engler, would you say that the Israelis have lost in the court of public opinion?
They've been very damaged in the court of public opinion. There is clearly millions and millions of people here in Canada and tens, hundreds of millions of people around the world who no longer believe their claims, their propaganda. Whether they've lost, I wouldn't go so far as to say that for certain. Having the backing of the U.S. empire and having the backing of the biggest media outlets in North America is very powerful friends in your corner. But it's been incredibly damaged. I think there's for anyone who's somewhat progressive, there's probably no going back. Increasingly, support for Israel is something that you find among the more right wing, the more openly pro-imperial, pro-empire factions of Canadian, U.S. Political life. And that is probably that's never going to change. And that process has been going on for years now. And it's been accelerated rapidly with the incredible level of violence and horrors that Israel's committed against Palestinians in Gaza.
Let's see what Mr. Barakat has to say about that. Sir, I phrased it as the Israelis losing in the court of public opinion. I want to get your thoughts on that as well, given the increased level of global awareness, the worldwide support for Palestinians, the opposition to the Israeli war. And let's not forget all that's been happening with regards to the online and social media propaganda where the Israelis, they come up with stories, they post videos, and then they have to retract them and delete those videos. Give us your thoughts, please.
Well, if we're talking about public opinion worldwide, I think that Palestinians have always won in that arena. But if we are talking about in the West, particularly because that's the real fight on public opinion in the Western world, and particularly in places like the United States, Canada, Britain, France, Germany, and so on and so forth. And on that level, I think that in certain areas, Palestinians have definitely won that public opinion, especially in places like Canada. For example, 3 out of 4 Canadians think that there should be a ceasefire, and many of them view what's happening as an Israeli aggression. I do agree with Eve on that a great damage has happened to Israel narrative and the Zionist narrative in terms of, the support of Israel, even particularly amongst the younger generation, where we see more support of the Palestinian people, right, Palestinian resistance. And that includes the many young people from Jewish backgrounds who now are more daring in expressing their support for the Palestinian people. So I think it is definitely a qualitative step towards, a decisive victory in terms of public opinion for Palestine.
And Mr. Engler, looking at what's taking place online, what many would be calling the online propaganda efforts by the Israelis, where they try to portray themselves as the victims and trying to justify the war crimes that they're committing against Palestinians in Gaza, there was a report, an analysis, basically, by a company which was, in fact, pro-Israeli, that around 7 billion posts were pro-Israeli, with pro-Israeli tags were published on Instagram and TikTok since October 7th, compared to 109 billion posts with pro-Palestinian tags. So that speaks volumes in itself. Break that down for us, please.
Yeah, and I bet you a lot of the pro-Israel posts are indirectly or directly paid for by the Israeli government or their lobby groups.
Sure.
So that those numbers are would be even more skewed if not. I think that has an age component to it. It's very clear that that the younger generation. I've even seen that myself. You know, I'm 20 years out of university, and there was big battles on Palestine when I was at university 20 years ago. Now the pro-Israel crowd is completely unable to engage in any sort of democratic process at the university level. So, for instance, the Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights at McGill University has a resolution that their students are voting on right now, an anti-genocide in Palestine resolution. And the Israel supporters on campus won't even engage in the referendum. All they're doing is calling on the university administration to just ban the referendum and the university administration to put pressure on the student union that if they accept this referendum, that they will, you know, lose their funding. So they know that among 20-year-olds, they can't win the, you know, any kind of like voting process. And I think that's somewhat what we're seeing reflected on the social media platforms that are particularly used by younger people, is that they don't like seeing Palestinian babies being killed by Israel and Gaza, and they don't have this baggage of I don't know, we call it the legacy of the Nazi Holocaust. They are more multiracial. They're not as inclined towards believing that you know, white Europeans are the best and everything. You know, they're always great or whatever. And so there's an obvious race dynamic to this conflict, and young inclined to believe that sort of imperial colonial ideology. So the Israel lobby people, they know it. They're scared. They don't know what to do. If you looked at that recent Israel rally in Washington D.C., they were paying students $250 to attend. To attend the demonstration. And, you know, obviously the Palestine Solidarity, the anti-war forces don't have those resources. We have to, you know, pay out of pocket to take a bus down to the protests. But so they are losing the battle. All the surveys, Khaled just pointed out, Canadian, if you look at the breaking down of Canadian public opinion by age category, you find that younger people are more likely to believe Israel's an apartheid state by large margins. They believe that Israel's an apartheid state. So that's a danger from the Israel lobby's perspective going forward. This kind of stuff is, of course, sort of existential threat going forward.
Mr. Barakat, as Mr. Engler just mentioned, more and more people are coming to the realization that the Israeli regime is an apartheid regime. In addition to that, when we look at the mainstream media narrative that the Israelis usually have, they throw in all kinds of twists and turns to try to justify what they're doing in Gaza. They say they want to eradicate Hamas. They say they're opening humanitarian corridors, allowing people to move to the south of Gaza. Yet, we see demonstrations, for example, in Madrid, in Spain, where people took to the streets showing their support for Palestinians. They carried placards reading, "This is not a war, it's genocide." So people, in spite of all the media propaganda, all the media, the twisted media narratives, people are already recognizing this as a genocide.
Absolutely. And it's because of struggle and because of people commitment and because of many, many voices that have made this a reality, including people conscious. I mean, you know, when they listen to the Israeli rhetoric and Israel try to promote itself as a victim, yet Israel have a nuclear weapon, the only country in the entire area that actually have a nuclear weapon, and now they're publicly threatening to use it, you know, by ministers in this fascist government. So at the same time, Israel goes into this contradiction. They want to play the victim card, and they want to promote themselves as a very strong and advanced army that can, you know, kill babies and destroy universities and hospitals and so on and so forth. So you don't really need to know so much history about the conflict in order to realize that what's happening here is a war crime and genocide. Particularly in today's, you know, age of media, and people have access to, you know, alternative narratives and, you know, media outlets. Just imagine 25 years ago, 30 years ago, in Canada, if you're just, you know, an average Canadian person who wants, who reads, you know, the Globe and Mail or Vancouver Sun or the National Post, you're pretty much getting the same story about Palestine, although there's three different newspapers, but you don't get a real alternative information. The same goes with, you know, TV stations, radio. So where can people actually get a real information, real, you know, facts? In today's age, I think with the world is changing, and we see that how also Palestinians are, especially in Gaza, you know, they're very active in terms of communicating with the world, showing the world what's really happening. There are also a very good writers and journalists who have access now to different media outlets. Somebody like our friends, Eve here, you know, he writes all the time about Palestine, and he have many readers, but he's not going to be welcome in the mainstream media, you know, or the, you know, liberal media in this country. But now we have different forms or forums in which we can hear alternative voices. And at the same time, we began to see a little bit of change in terms of school curriculum, university curriculum, especially in studies like history, anthropology, you know, studying colonialism, studying the era of slavery. These kind of studies didn't exist, you know, a few decades back. And now there's more of them. And so the younger generation, since high school, they're more exposed into, you know, a more real kind of accounts of history. And so they come to universities these days ready to take a stand against apartheid, against colonization, against these kinds of oppression, not just in Palestine, but worldwide.
Right. And Mr. Engler, what about the hypocrisy that we're seeing, most notably in European countries, with regards to these demonstrations? For example, you can burn the Holy Quran. That's considered free speech. But if you were to burn an Israeli flag, that would be a major offense. They would arrest you. They would charge you. How do you explain that?
It's flagrant hypocrisy. We see this in Calgary here in Canada. A protest organizer was arrested for chanting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. The Israel lobby, while they're committing genocide, they have the media talking about how some chant for equal rights is genocide. There's a whole effort to ban protests here. And as you mentioned, in Germany and in France, they've banned all kinds of Palestine solidarity protests. It's not really explainable beyond it's just serving power. It just speaks to how deferential those countries are to Israel and to the U.S. empire. All of the rhetoric in terms of the hypocrisy, all of the rhetoric about Russia violating international law and Ukraine's right to resistance and all this kind of stuff, it's all been so crassly thrown out the window. And Israel's constant violation of international law is not cited. You know, we're not even, you know, we should be sending, by that logic, we should be sending weapons to a Palestinian resistance if we're saying that with regards to Russia and Ukraine. But the hypocrisy is just off the charts. obviously also the whole the ability to mobilize the European destruction of Jewry, the Nazi Holocaust, the ability to mobilize that on behalf of Israel's genocidal policies is pretty remarkable. So you have this incredible horror that happened in human history being used to justify this ongoing horror. So that's part of the equation here. It's so cynical to see the Israel lobby organizations do that, and so many politicians go along with that. But that's part of this ability to shut down expressions of support for the Palestinian cause here in Canada, in Europe, and elsewhere.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Sure. Mr. Barakat, many officials, many diplomats from around the world have been blaming the United States and European countries for what's taking place right now. They've been many opinions have gone as far as saying that the United States is actually complicit in the war crimes that are being committed by the Israeli regime. I want to get your thoughts on how do you see, how would you rate the level of involvement of the United States when we're talking about the blood of Palestinian children? And is the scenario, the notion that the United States could actually stop the Israelis from carrying out the incessant bombings, that could happen immediately. Do you agree with that notion?
Absolutely. And I think the United States is actually leading this war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people. They are providing Israel with military support, financial support, political cover in all international arena, adopting literally the Zionist narrative and the Israeli discourse in all levels without any efforts to even check. And that's because the United States inherited Israel, in the region, as they inherited the British Empire of the region. And now the United States is an occupying power in the region. And that's how it is being viewed by the vast majority of the people in the region, that the United States is the leading factor in terms of wars. When we look at what happened in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Yemen, in Palestine, in Lebanon, in 2006, Israel did not even want to go into a massive war against Lebanon. They were viewing, they were calculating if they should do or not. But the United States and Condoleezza Rice have pushed and kept pushing to continue, not just attack Lebanon, not just destroy the Western District and, vast majority of the villages in the south, but they kept pushing Ehud Olmert then to continue his war in Lebanon. And at the end, Israel did not achieve any of its objectives. The resistance in Lebanon is 1,000 more strong than what it was in 2006. And I think that it's the same scenario happening today in Gaza, except the what happened is that Gaza have no depth. The resistance is being under siege from also Egypt. And that's why, you know, the Palestinian situation is much harder than in Lebanon. But it's the United States who is definitely doing this. And if you ask Palestinians, the vast majority of Palestinians will tell you that Israel and the United States are both leading this wars and genocide against us. And this is public. You know, when they ask the U.S. representative in the United Nations why you did not call for a ceasefire a month ago, she said, well, because the resolution that was presented by Russia did not include the right of Israel to self-defense. And first of all, it's a lie. And second of all, it's they're willing to lie publicly and keep lying in order to, pressure the Palestinian people to surrender and to push Palestinian resistance to surrender. And I think Israel is going to fail in all of its objectives. The only thing that the United States and Israel not doing now is they're just killing more Palestinians, destroying more Palestinian lives, and not achieving any real political objectives.
Let's get a final quick question for Mr. Engler, very briefly, if you may, sir. An analyst that we spoke to earlier here during one of our broadcasts said that one of the main problems internationally is that there's a lack of proper mechanism to solve the situation. That's, of course, alluding to the likes of the United Nations Security Council. After 42 days, the best they could come up with was just something absurd as humanitarian pauses. So talk to us about that, as if you may. Also, then there's bodies like the ICC and the ICJ, which are relatively moot, at least when it comes to the case of the Israelis at this point.
Yeah, Russia taking hundreds of Ukrainian kids to Russia led to ICC charge, Israel killing 6,000 Palestinian children in Gaza, and we haven't seen that move forward. Right. Yesterday here in Canada, there was a bid to, there's a serving of notice to the prime minister, foreign minister, and two other ministers that they will be seek prosecution for their role in aiding and abetting Israel's war crimes. There's been similar efforts in other countries. So that I know South Africa just announced that they were taking, they were calling on the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel's crimes. So those avenues definitely need to be pursued. I think they're going to be very difficult so long as the U.S. empire is bankrolling all this, providing diplomatic cover, providing, you know, pressuring international courts to the International Court, Criminal Court, and other bodies to not investigate Israel's crimes. That's going to, but I would venture to guess that Israeli politicians and military leaders are going to have a harder and harder time traveling internationally in the coming weeks and coming months and maybe coming years.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Eve Engler, author and political activist, joining us from Montreal. And thanks to Mr. Khaled Barakat, spokesperson of the Masar Battle Movement, joining us from Vancouver. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
The World Health Organization has said a child is killed on average every 10 minutes in the besieged Gaza Strip, warning that nowhere and no one is safe under the Zionist regime's relentless onslaught on the coastal enclave. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Common Dreams wrote, on the same day GOP clowns and yahoos played out an evil game of condemning the only Palestinian-American member of Congress for opposing genocide and insisting we cannot lose our shared humanity, Palestinian doctors facing an avalanche of human suffering unveiled their grisly new acronym for a kind of war victim unique to the Gaza Strip, WCNSF, for Wounded Child No Surviving Family. One doctor, this should be seared into our collective conscience and haunt us. In its grotesque distortion of a righteous stand, the House finally censured Representative Rashida Tlaib for denouncing a savage, the Zionist regime assault that has killed over 11,000 Palestinians, most civilians, almost half children, in a month. 22 Democrats joined Republicans to vote for a resolution that falsely accused Tlaib of calling for a destruction of the regime of Israel. Its sponsor, Representative Rich McCormick, also charged Tlaib levied unbelievable falsehoods about our greatest ally, Israel, as they claimed. In fact, Tlaib has painfully, repeatedly mourned the loss of civilian lives while decrying a brutal apartheid system that gave rise to it and an ongoing anti-Palestinian bigotry that has sustained it. In a tearful speech, she argued she seeks only to ensure that all people can live in peace and tranquility. She said, "I can't believe I have to say this, but Palestinian people are not disposable." Insisting no government is beyond criticism, she noted a majority of Americans support a ceasefire. But this Congress isn't listening to their voices. This was the second censure effort after Marjorie Space Laser Green unsuccessfully charged Tlaib led an insurrection by joining a peaceful protest of Jews demanding a ceasefire. Green tried and failed again by changing the language to illegal occupation, evidently without irony. Still, critics blasted the malevolent idiocy behind GOP efforts to silence Tlaib rather than save lives and their partisan unprecedented wielding of censure to do it, especially after they remained silent when GOP colleagues compared all Palestinians to Nazis and called for turning Gaza into a parking lot. In a stark contrast, argued supporters, Congresswoman Tlaib's moral courage will never be extinguishable. Derek Davidson wrote, Tlaib should ask for a copy of the censure resolution, dip it in bronze, and hang it on her office wall. Being condemned by this abhorrent mob of psychopaths is a badge of honor if ever there was one. Others blasted Dems who joined in the bigotry. Meanwhile, the killing of innocent Palestinians goes on. It has been over a month of unimaginable loss in Gaza, with deaths reaching more than 11,000. UN and other rights workers describe disastrous and catastrophic conditions. No food, no water, no power, no flour for bread. Infectious diseases surging from failing sanitation systems. Hospitals overflowing with patients on floors as depleted doctors perform surgery without anesthetic. Relentless Israeli regime airstrikes hit a humanitarian convoy of trucks carrying vital medical supplies to hospitals. Unfathomably, they also hit Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital, including the pediatric cancer ward, reportedly twice. Wrenching videos show civilians fleeing Gaza City on foot, white flags and hands in the air. And the aftermath of a bombing in Al-Maghazi refugee camp that killed 9 members of one family. People weeping, yelling, running with small bodies to an idling car, hoping to get them to a hospital alive. Media coverage often worsens the crimes. Talk of a conflict, use of a passive were killed, with no mention of the killers, like an act of God, disbelief about the devastation. We must verify our deaths as we die, amidst the grim reality that there is not a single person who will come out unscathed physically or psychologically. As always, the true victims are children. The Zionist regime has now killed over 5,000 Palestinian children, one roughly every 10 minutes, and twice the total killed since 1967 in the West Bank and Gaza combined. Thousands more remain missing under rubble, presumed dead, another unfathomable. Those are just the lucky ones. Many more now die slowly of hunger and thirst, of infectious diseases, from drinking sewage or sea water, of cancer, untreated, and disease left to spread. These were children already broken, scarred, their lives convulsed by violence, whose mental health has been pushed beyond breaking point. Since the 2007 blockade, 80% of Gaza children have reported feeling perpetual fear, grief, and anxiety. Now, with death on all sides, there is no safe place to take their trauma. A UN staff member and father of 3 young children says, "There is a lot of loss and a lot of pain. We are fearful of what coming hours will bring, what tomorrow will bring. My children look into my eyes every day. They are searching for answers. I have no answers for them." So many children have lost so many family members, says Jason Lee of Save the Children, adding, "We are running out of words to articulate the scale of children's suffering. Language falters. Brutal necessity pushes on. Doctors are seeing so many wounded children without any family left to care for them. They have had to coin a new term to identify these singularly grievous war victims. WCNSF, Wounded Child No Surviving Family." In a grim interview from Jordan, Dr. Tania Haj Hassan, a pediatric intensive care doctor and co-founder of Gaza Medic Voices, said colleagues have been using it not infrequently for a few weeks. "The collective stain on humanity it represents," she added, "should not exist as an acronym." And she dismissed talk of a humanitarian pause. "A pause to me makes no sense," she said. "You pause to nourish and hydrate the population before you kill them? You stop the bombardment. It is the children of Gaza's cursed fate who have given birth to a name that should not exist," writes Muhammad Nasser, who has sought to chronicle the loss of the innocent souls, the ones who do not hurt a living thing, by photographing those who remain for now. "Of those gone," he writes, "they will no longer play their games or follow their football heroes. These children knew their Ronaldos or their messes, yet they were targeted. Why? We asked that question, but we are answered only with silence. Full of love, they live, and full of life, they die.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, now I offer my son to you. See, I offer my son to you. Only to you I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you, you who have my roots. Palestine. Tears and your brother's cry have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here. Land, your blood.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.